This is Geek Speak for Saturday, July 18th, 2015. We're broadcasting from Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is KUSP Public Radio, 88.9 and KUSP.org. And ladies and gentlemen, it's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. Please keep in mind that the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP or any of the geeks' affiliated organizations. I'm Bonnie Primsch, and with me in the studio is Miles Elam, political junkie and goat herder.
Good morning, afternoon, wherever you're listening.
Goat morning. And Brian Young, CG artist, iOS developer, and lifelong tinkerer.
Hey, Bonnie. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Also, Lyle Troxell, our silent geek peak, our silent geek speak producer.
Good said. Oh, I'm silent. Sorry.
Lots to cover on the show today, and I've been away for weeks and weeks, so I'm going to need some major fill-in. So forgive me if I ask some stupid questions.
There are no stupid questions, Bonnie.
But you know, I was just in Spain, Miles, so I would like to start with your item about the Andalusian town, which has gone all Twitter.
Yes, in Andalusia, it's a town that was founded over 2,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. Former Roman. What? It fits in well because it's this place that is 2 millennia old, and yet that town is basically run on Twitter.
What do you mean it's run on Twitter?
I mean that all bureaucracy, city council talking to citizenry, getting feedback, finding out what's going on, sending suggestions, public services, infrastructure, are all done through Twitter accounts.
What, does that mean it's all public as well?
Yeah. Basically.
I mean, how internal is the conversation on Twitter? Is the town privy then to all of the inner workings of town, or is there just a public layer of conversation that happens on Twitter?
Well, just like any bureaucracy, you're going to have people saying, I don't want to talk about this during the meeting. You know, anyone who believes that the only time the city council members ever talk to one another is at the meeting is...
They don't know how government works.
Right. But the topics that go on that would be at a meeting, those are the things that go on Twitter saying, here's what I think, here's what I think, here's the statements from a user. And considering the city governments that I've gone to and the city council meetings that I've gone to, keeping someone to 140 characters would be an awesome idea.
That's actually kind of brilliant now that I think about it.
I'm just thinking of all the rambling meetings I've heard.
At
the same time, including everybody in town, it seems like a nightmare.
Yeah, so, well... In this town, in Hun, J-U-N.
J-U-N, yeah, Hun.
The mayor has over 35,000 followers, which is more than the mayors of the capital of Spain, Madrid, New York, or Barcelona.
Barcelona. So do you think other mayors are listening in to see how does this go? Because maybe we're next for Twitter town.
I don't know that they are. I mean, this is like technology. It's folks who embrace it will embrace it. And folks that are used to the way they're doing politics, if it's working for them, like mm-hmm. in a lot of towns, that's how they got elected, was how the gears work currently. Why switch that around? Because that puts you at a disadvantage.
The thing I like about this is by default, the town is going to be public on everything. Right, like that's the default experience for Twitter. It's public.
Yeah.
So that's neat.
That's
how government should be run.
Yeah. And if it really is run that way, I mean, I could see how very quickly the savvy Twitter users who are also in government would put out one range of things out on Twitter to kind of nudge things in a direction while background things happen over here.
Yeah. Something I think was very cool is the fact that aside from city council meetings and the equivalent, they also post things that would be in the newspaper in many other municipalities for the sheriff's report. You know, for example, those things that go on, except you're getting it in real time.
Yeah.
So if, like, someone just got robbed, then you tweet that. This person just got robbed. And so you get a huge amount of citizen participation. So it turns out with that participation, the mayor was able to reduce the police force from 4 officers to just 1.
Whoa. That poor police officer.
Yeah, reducing bureaucracy and getting rid of a lot of extra paperwork, too. I mean, by doing all of this.
So I wonder if there's any downsides that they identified. Maybe we should just tweet to the mayor and ask him himself.
Now, bear in mind that this is not a large city. In fact, right. quite the contrary. So Twitter may not scale like this. It's kind of like when people talk about they want a communist, anarcho-syndicalist commune, you know, or something like that.
All the time.
Whereas, yesterday.
Yeah.
Well, no, I hear this every once in a while, someone saying this is their utopia. And it works if you have 20 people. In fact, most forms of government work when you have 20 people, if they're all agreeing on it. It's when you start getting to larger and larger groups, you need something that scales better and not all of those things.
Well, they need to start being able to have like sub conversations and then bring that to the larger group at the very least.
Right. So it may not be a good deal for large cities, but it could work on a neighborhood level.
Right. Well, and already there are neighborhood message boards that have become pretty popular, mm-hmm. but I don't know if they've gone so bold as to be live on Twitter. Fascinating. I wonder if we can catch up with those guys later and see how their experiment is going.
You could check right now on Twitter.
I guess you could.
Is it in Spanish?
Yes.
Yeah. Do they list some of the Twitter handles there in the article you read?
Yes. The mayor's Twitter handle is Jose Antonio Jun.
Okay. So if you were to type in Jose Antonio Jun, and that's J-U-N, mm-hmm. You would be able to find the mayor of Jun.
And while you're at it, include at KOSP Geeks, because that's who we are. So we can,
good point, producer
yeah.
Troxel.
Yeah, and there's Policia Jun and Barredora Jun.
Okay, so we're going to have the article on our website, geekspeak.org. And who produced that story? Where did you get that story?
This is from a place called Cities of the Future.
Okay, so you'll be able to find that at our website. Brian, I wanted to follow up with you on something we've been talking about here on GeekSpeak.
Yeah, we've had multiple stories over the last few weeks, and really these come out of a renewed interest in content blocking that has come out of the Apple Developers Conference. They're allowing iOS, the Safari on iOS, to now have content blockers, which we've talked about AdBlock Plus and AdBlock before, ways of blocking ads before they get into your browser mm-hmm. when you're viewing. So, but this applies to everyone. It's not just iOS users. It's not just Safari users. There's content blockers on all platforms now. Mm-hmm. But what I wanted to bring up is this is really interesting. In the Apple world, there's been this discussion going on since they have announced the availability of content blockers. And a particular site that covers Apple called iMore, they do some great reporting, but they've been kind of picked on for their own ads on the site. Somebody decided to do a test.
Yeah.
And they said, okay, I'm going to load their site on my iOS device. It took 11 seconds to load everything on
Apple's
there.
Website?
No, this is the iMore website.
iMore covers Apple stuff.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It took 11 seconds to load this iMore site. And, of course, they're a commercial site. They have ads on there. They make their living through the ads that people see when they read the articles. Mm-hmm. So he turned the content blocker on, and lo and behold, the site loaded in 2 seconds flat. That's more than five time increase in speed loading just by getting rid of all of the ads and the trackers that are on the websites.
Wow!
So this really spurred on a lot of discussion. And the main contributor to iMore, the editor, he wrote a response. And when you look at his response, even though it's all text, no graphics, no nothing on there that's tricky, what was it like 500 word response was a 14 megabyte download just the entire website page was that big. It made 330 connections to different servers to read that one response to
and
this.
Did he do that on purpose or
no
what?
no, this is just the way their site is set up because it's a commercial website. Okay. they're trying to
it's a bad commercial website obviously. They're not doing website.
Well yes they're being picked on they're bad, but really it's not much better on most commercial websites.
Typical is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's pretty typical.
Just think of the number of requests just to get social media on there. You know, something from StumbleUpon, something from Twitter, something from Facebook. You know, all of these one-off scripts that sometimes load other scripts to then inject something into your page. It adds up really quick.
And when it comes to the trackers, it's not even something that's at all visible on the page or at all useful to the user.
Right.
Well, maybe it's useful if you consider getting served the relevant ads, if you think that happens.
Well, I guess we get into the, and I'm sure you've had this debate already while I was away in Barcelona, but there's that sort of clash between wanting to serve the user and also wanting to make your dollar.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. And of course, if people get fed up with these ads and start blocking them, the site's not going to make their money. But then again, if they're making their money this way, maybe there's a better way where people won't get so frustrated with the load times and the ads.
I guess it gets down to how much are people willing to pay for their viewing experience themselves?
And on the internet, traditionally, very little.
Yeah.
But we had this problem with spam years ago, where why do we keep getting so much spam? And the answer was because it works. People buy things because they get the spam messages. Mm-hmm. And fundamentally, we have these ads because they work. Enough people want to sell things through ads, and enough people want to buy them that it's a lucrative business to show these ads, lucrative enough to support a website. So fundamentally, you can say we're to blame.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's on you, pal, you who are listening. Speaking of nebulous territory, Miles, Uber is creating quite a bit of groundbreaking territory in...
Well, Uber's not the only one, but they are the archetype here for employees that... Are they not really? Are they contractors? Are they employees? Are they part-time employees?
They're proto really self-driving cars, is what they are. They're temporary.
Well, that remains to be seen. But at the same time, it's like think of your average Uber driver. You know, that's what they're doing all day long.
Right.
And they may take a break from it, or But at the same time, a lot of people who are doing Uber, they aren't doing it. Well, I'm just going to do this once. And then a month later, I'm going to do it once.
Or I'll do it between breaks between my other two jobs.
So Uber drivers, how are they paid? Just while they're driving for that particular person, they're paid for that? They don't have any sort of benefits? They don't have any sort of contract?
Right. That's the thing is Uber is referring to them as independent contractors. They are not employees. And that's a problem because that means that they are not paying... things like for example, an employee has to be paid minimum wage, and there are laws invoked for that. Overtime, workers' compensation, health insurance, unemployment insurance. And yet if someone is working for Uber, Lyft, TaskRabbit, Handy, HomeJoy, any of these other companies that are the forefront of this new economy, they're being treated like a contractor, but they're not making the money or able to set their own rates like a contractor would to be able to cover their costs.
Right.
And they're skipping that safety net that was put in place for workers because they would be dependent upon this entity. Now, the question is, what happens if you have a person that is an employee of three of these companies all at once? Are they an employee of them? And so it's an interesting article that comes about saying maybe we need a new category to cover this new zone. I don't have an answer to this. It's something, but
it
I think
sounds like the article doesn't either, but it's an interesting question.
Well,
because clearly the traditional methods of defining a worker don't cover the sharing economy vampire that is Uber.
Well, it's interesting. We've seen a bunch of industries now over the course of a digital age go through these huge upheavals of a completely new model coming to replace the inefficient old model. Taxi drivers may be replaced by Uber in this case. But the new model comes in and it looks great and everybody thinks, oh, this is fantastic. And they see all these benefits. But then as the new model replaces the old completely, it starts to settle in into something that's a little bit more strict and people are a little less happy. I'm thinking of Amazon and buying books. When people could just buy books online, it was this real boon, but now all these other booksellers are out of business and there's concerns,
unintended consequences.
Right, there's concerns that Amazon's become too powerful.
It's a disruptive technology, right? A disruptive business model. But I don't understand why these aren't just contractors. What's different about a contractor and an Uber driver?
If you're an independent contractor, you can set your own rates. Is that the main difference?
That's one thing that's in there. It's also the fact that you are if you're an Uber driver, that is essentially full-time. That's what you're doing as an income. You are essentially an employee of Uber. That's where and you're not giving a bill of sale. You're not saying this is what my time is worth as you would with a contractor. You are completely dependent upon their pricing model.
Yeah.
They are setting everything up in much the same way as an employer would set up for an employee.
It seems to me kind of like a micro
franchise.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, like a micro franchise of one.
Yeah.
But then if you want to earn extra dollars and become a Lyft franchise and an Uber franchise, I think that happens.
But I mean, let's say if you're an employee for some company and you are fired for some reason, or, you know, I don't know, you got into a fight with a coworker, not like a fist fight, but I mean, like you butted heads with someone and one of you is going to get fired and you were the one who got fired.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You can collect unemployment.
Right.
A lot of times. And that's mostly because you've been paying into unemployment insurance. When you are a 1099 contractor, that doesn't apply.
Right.
And so Uber is getting the advantages of an employee without having to pay for that safety net that that is normally ascribed to by contractors. And the Uber driver doesn't have the leverage to be able to negotiate those rates to improve their situation.
I don't know why I jumped to the news item that some websites, their writers are actually unionizing. The union has arrived in the new mediascape. And I don't, like Uber, I kind of think of as being an extension of, like, it's like a new media company because you use new media methods.
It's something, it's something new. And something, it's a variation of something old that's been put into a new mold that we're not, it's a new designer drug for the economy.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm wondering if, along with a new definition for that type of worker, if a new type of unionizing might also be possible.
So did they put forth a what would define this new worker?
Well, they talk about dependent contractor. That's just a name. I mean, that doesn't...
But they're talking about making a hybrid between a traditional employee and a traditional contracting relationship.
Yeah, just trying to shift that balance of power a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, at the moment, I still hear most Uber drivers seem to be really happy with it, but we'll see as this evolves.
It does seem like there's quite a bit of piggybacking going on. Like, hey, I'll rent you a car for a while so you can be an Uber driver, even though you don't have a car. Like, I'm not sure how a person who falls into that kind of a deal winds up with any money at the end of the project. But
yeah, and then there's the folks who are both Uber and Lyft, and it's whoever, you know, makes the call in, that's who they go with.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of pigging back of on someone else's efforts, Brian, can you explain to me what freebooting is?
Freebooting, yeah. So it's got a pretty funny history. It actually is a term that comes from 19th century slang in the sea piracy, but that's not what we're talking about. This is Geek Speak. So Facebook has a little bit longer than a year ago, started an initiative where they wanted to host the video content of people who wanted to post videos. And this has been increasingly happening. So what the problem is there are people on YouTube, you know, not Facebook.
Like a YouTube channel.
Yes, people on YouTube that do pretty well. Some of them are making a living. The ones that are doing really well. Some of the video game related YouTube channels have done extraordinarily well. But there's also other people that do it as a hobby. In this case, there's somebody who does a YouTube channel that he basically uses the money just to fund his kids' college fund. Mm-hmm. But I think you guys have heard about the Smarter Every Day.
Yeah.
Awesome. He's a great guy. So he did a video. It was all about slow motion tattoo. So somebody getting a tattoo in slow motion.
Ew.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't been able to look at it because, you know, the subject matter wasn't for me. But
morbidly fascinating.
But he knew that his followers, his subscribers were going to love this. And he knew before he even put it up, this is going to be this best video ever. And so he puts it up on Facebook. I'm sorry, he puts it up on YouTube and it does well. But he gets a notice a couple days later by one of his subscribers that somebody has taken his video, edited out all of the references to his channel,
to
Smarter Every Day, and put it up on Facebook. And he's getting a massive, that person that posted on Facebook is getting a massive following. So when it was put up on YouTube, it took 9 months to get 20 million views.
Yeah.
When it was put up on Facebook by this other person editing out all of his references to himself, it was 18 million views in the first 2 days alone.
Hey, that guy's taking food out of Smart Every Day's mouth.
Well, here's the thing. When you watch a YouTube video, it's got an advertisement in front of it these days.
Yeah.
Anybody who's trying to make a channel to make some money, they're using video ads on it.
Mm-hmm.
But what... what face booting is. I'm sorry, no, free booting. What this is people want to use other people's content to get people looking at their feed. Mm-hmm. And who's making the money on it? It's not the people that are grabbing the video, editing, and posting it as theirs. It's Facebook. Facebook's putting ads up on the site.
Does that mean that Smart Every Day had a hard time getting Facebook's cooperation and stopping this nonsense?
Well, it depends what you mean by hard time. There is a mechanism for alerting Facebook that, hey, this is not their content. This mm-hmm. is my content. I've got a copyright to it. And it would take 2, 3, 4 days to pull the content down.
Well, that's so many views, though.
Well, that's what you're talking about. These views are so extraordinary, 20 million in 2 days, that in basically an internet time, this is incredibly slow.
I would think that any money that Facebook makes off of it, off ads on because of that video, is owed to him.
You would think so, but that's not the relationship right now.
That's not the relationship even with the dude who pirated it, right?
No. The dude who pirated it, he's just getting recognition.
Right.
He's not getting a monetary benefit other than more people possibly looking at his other content. So it's a really odd situation. The time scale is a little bizarre here, that in 2 days you can achieve what somebody did in 9 months.
If Facebook is making money off of copyrighted material, they're in the wrong.
They are. And YouTube was also held to this standard when they first started up. A lot of people claiming the same thing, and they had to make their content ID system, which pretty much is instant. If you try to post something and you include music on there that is somebody else's copyright, it's not going to play the music when the first person views the video.
Or if someone claims that it's somebody else's copyright. That's, of course, negative side effect of that.
It can go too far, and things can be taken down too quickly.
Well, and as we wrap this story up, where do things stand right now, Brian?
Well, as it stands right now, Facebook says that they understand the problem, they're aware of it, and they're working on it. They have a system that is somewhat in place to help with copyright infringement. But like I said, it's a matter of scale. It's how many views and how quickly they're happening that people are going to be losing out on the money they're owed.
Well, I'm sure we'll check in back with that story as we can. You're listening to Here on Geek Speak on KUSP. We'll be right back. It's a Geek Speak here on KUSP. I'm Bonnie Jean Primsch here with Miles Elam and Brian Young. And Brian, just before the break, we were talking about a freebooting where someone else is getting recognition by yoinking someone else's material, but Facebook makes all the money.
Yeah, so there is something that we can all do if you ever notice this happening. If you ever see a video in Facebook, now these are not YouTube videos linked to within Facebook. These are actually hosted by Facebook in Facebook's player. If you ever see somebody's content from another service posted in there, there's three things you can quickly do. You can capture that as a screen capture or even get a video of it playing on Facebook.
Okay.
You can comment that this is not the person who made this, who has the copyright to it, so that everybody else viewing the video can see that this is a not copyrighted work.
Put that in the comments of the Facebook posting?
Exactly.
Okay.
And you can contact the original author so that he knows that this has been stolen, and he can follow up with the procedures that can get it taken down.
Okay. So that's where things stand right now. And as we get more information about what actually worked in terms of what did Facebook do, we'll be sure and let you know here on Geek Speak, which is the show you're listening to now. Miles, at the beginning of the show, I mentioned that I'd just come back from Barcelona.
Mm-hmm.
My gosh, the amount of time I spent on a plane in economy class, it was quite cramped.
Yes.
But I hear that things are going to change in airplanes.
Yes, people are trying to make you even more cramped.
No, that's the wrong direction. Miles, that's the wrong direction.
Trying to redesign seats so that you can fit more people in the same space.
How on earth? Because already we're edging past each other and the flight attendants are having to wait until you're, done waiting in line for the restroom before they can roll their cart down the aisle.
A company called Zodiac Seats France. They're actually the world's largest airline seat maker. Who knew that there were companies that, their claim to fame was making airline seats. But instead of having all the seats face the same direction, it has them interleaved. So let's say you had three seats next to one another. The middle seat is facing the opposite direction as the other two.
How does this help with space?
Well, one of the things they're doing also is making the seats theater style. So when you get up, the seats, the actual seat cushion flips up, and so you end up with this aisle to get in.
So is the entire row down the plane facing the same direction, but then you go one seat to the left or right, and they're facing the other direction?
They, you have
it's
this
like a zigzag?
Honeycomb.
I don't see how that fits more people.
I don't either. I guess we'll have to see it on geekspeak.org.
The seats are thinner. The back is thinner.
Yeah, I think one of the big design choices wasn't even so much the orientation of where you're facing, but the fact that the seat cushions will flip up out of the way
space,
so you can get in and out faster.
The space sitting is that your widest point is your hips, not your legs. So if your hips and my knees are the same point, there's more space.
Yes, oh, but narrowing, not the leg room.
Look at the trapezoidal shape of the seat in that picture.
Got it.
Oh, now I've ruined our ability to go to GeekSpeak and see it for yourself. Sorry.
But as soon as I like cross my leg and put my knee out
there. No crossing your leg.
Oh, no.
No, there'll be none of that. Wait, so you already can't do that. Well, and, you know, interestingly, my travel companion tried to engineer a little space for us on the seats by booking every other seat. So we get like seat A and C in hopes that nobody would buy seat B. And then
that
there'd
work.
It didn't. No. It worked
but
one
that's
time.
How you know George.
Yeah. And George is very uncomfortable and wanted to move.
Yeah.
George was like, please stop holding each other's hands on my lap.
George, you're part of us now. All right. Well, I who knows if that's actually going to... That's a design idea, right?
Yeah.
I mean, has anyone bought this idea? Are airlines implementing it?
Not as yet. They filed a patent, and that's how people found out about it. So, and the thing is, it doesn't take into account the guys with a sense of entitlement have the wide stance. You know,
yeah, the mansplayers.
Yes.
Actually, no, it kind of does handle the wide stance because then you can't put your legs apart because there's seats there, right?
I mean, you'll put it right up to the seat,
and then if you put your elbow, I mean,
you make
you
a lot of lady knees uncomfortable.
You don't have a shoulder right next to you, right? You have a void where the people's legs are. It potentially could be a little more comfortable.
I hope everybody enjoys talking to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and staring at each other.
Being stared at by the person who's, you know.
The thing I'm always confused about is why don't we just have little, like, coffin spaces where you can lay down? Because I'm okay with laying down for 9 hours for a flight.
So we need to adopt.
I actually can have my own space.
Well, Greg, our Canadian correspondent recommends just getting rid of overhead luggage and then we can lie in the bins.
But that's the kind of space I want. Like a hotel in Japan, right?
It's time to adopt.
Slide your body in and there's people above you and below you.
It's time to adopt deep space travel methods.
Absolutely.
And we can all go to sleep and wake up in the other continent.
I like it.
I mean,
Bonnie, would you rather lay down for 9 hours or sit up for 9 hours?
I want to be able to choose, though. Because sometimes I want to get up and then I want to bonk my head on something.
You.
I get no choices. All right. Fine. I don't know, Brian. I don't know if I'm really done talking about Facebook.
Oh, yeah. Facebook.
Let's go back to Facebook.
Yeah, they're always in the news, aren't they?
Yeah.
Well, this time, it's not really about Facebook, but they have a new security chief. And Alex Stamos has something he'd really like Adobe to do. He says it's time for Adobe to put away Flash. It's time to end it.
Why is he saying what Adobe should do?
Okay, so it's been a couple weeks. Did we cover the hacking team story?
As a point of reference, there's a 0-day open right now for both Flash and the Java plugin.
That means someone can get in your computer if you visit their website and they've got this vulnerability taken advantage of. So there's no way for you to protect yourself. There's no security. There's no protection. That's what a zero
day. Why do they call it a 0-day?
Because there's no warning. It was actually being exploited in the wild, and the first people heard of it was the fact that it was being exploited. There wasn't a security bulletin ahead of time.
So there's a 0-day for what?
Flash and Java.
Okay.
So, okay.
And is that why Alex is saying that Flash must go?
Yeah. So let's back up just a little bit. A couple weeks ago, there was a group called the Hacking Team that was hacked. They're a company that provides software to governments.
This.
Yeah, they provide software to governments.
And then we got to find out who all they were selling their stuff to.
Yeah.
Was it last week on GeekSpeak or not?
I believe we did. It was last week or the week before. So when this hacking team got hacked, a lot of the secrets that were known to their customers and stuff became available. So they had a particular vulnerability for Flash that they said was the most beautiful Flash bug they'd seen in the last 4 years. Of course, it's beautiful to them because they can sell a product that will get into a computer for the FBI, for the CIA, for anybody who's a customer of theirs. Mm-hmm. And so when this was discovered in their treasure trove of 400 gigabytes of things that were stolen from the hacking team, the hackers out there instantly went to town to try to take advantage of it. And also Adobe very quickly put out a patch to fix Flash. Of course, this has been happening as an arms race day after day, year after year now for a long time with Flash. It's had it's more than its share of vulnerabilities. So this, getting back to Facebook, Alex Stamos says it's time for Adobe to announce an end date for Flash, to deprecate it, to say after, say, another 18 months, we're not going to develop it further, and it's time for all websites that use Flash to start switching over to something like HTML5 and making using technologies that are less vulnerable, or at least not relying on a single monoculture of technology that is having all these vectors.
So the guy at Facebook doesn't want somebody else to have a monoculture. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, yeah, so, it's something like that.
I mean, why is he talking about it?
From the web developer standpoint, this is also a shame because Flash did something exceedingly well, which is vector graphics mixed with raster graphics with a storyboard, timing, and synchronizing with audio.
And video,
that's
yeah,
and that's something that just, it's really painful comparatively on the web. Mm-hmm. You can do them, but it's really kind of baling wire and duct tape.
So what's the status of HTML5 now? I mean, do you think HTML5 is ready to replace it?
That's what I'm saying. The technology is there. You can have an audio tag. You have a video tag. You can have JavaScript try to sync stuff up. But there's a whole lot of manual hand-holding you have to do that was taken care of for you with Adobe Flash.
Plus bonus viruses.
So, hey.
Sweet. So, bad news for web developers.
I think Miles is kind of arguing, like, historical perspective. It's amazing what it did.
Okay.
I think that you and I, you would agree that it's time for Flash.
Yeah, Flash should go. I just wish the web were better to pick up the slack.
I agree.
Well, here, that's why Alex wants to make this public, because he wants to push that to happen, because it's not going to just happen organically or maybe it is, because we
He's thinking if there's some sort of deadline that it might motivate some tinkerers into coming up with a new thing.
I'm assuming that Facebook in no way helps Flash be run. Like, when you read your feed on Facebook, you don't see Flash content, right?
I don't recall any Flash content myself. They are not part of the ecosystem that needs Flash at all, and they've been...
He's just really sticking his nose in other people's business.
He is, but he's the security chief, so I'll give him a pass on that, because Flash has been a huge security vulnerability.
Yeah, but keep in mind, if there's a service out there that uses Flash, it's not Facebook. So Facebook saying Flash should die does not hurt them at all. In fact, it helps them because some of their competitors use Flash. And so in some ways, it's attack in that perspective. I happen to agree with this idea because of security concerns, but it's definitely self-serving.
Yeah. But in the meantime, we actually, because we were talking about content blockers, we actually have control over our browsers and we can choose what goes in them or not. I just want to let everyone know that there are a number of different options for protecting yourself. You can actually choose click-to-play plugins, which will not load any Flash content. In fact, you can block most content, and it'll just put a little graphic up there that says click if you want to play this, and you can choose what Flash gets run in your browser.
Good idea.
Okay. All right. There's a tip from one who knows. And when we come back, we'll find out if Google is being intentionally sexist. You're listening to Geek Speak here on KUSP. It's Geek Speak here on 88.9 KUSP and KUSP.org. I'm Bonnie Primsch, and I'm speaking with Miles Elam and Brian Young, with our silent producer, Lyle Troxel, weighing in every now and then. And I just saw a headline for this, Miles, but it was very effective in pissing me off, that women are less likely to be shown ads for high-paying jobs on Google.
Yes, this was covered by The Guardian.
And you actually read the article, so could you report, please, what you found out?
Well, this is the tyranny of the algorithm, because if you have a populace that is biased against women in the tech field, and I'm sorry if I'm bursting anyone's bubble, that bias actually does exist. It's not necessarily consciously malicious at all times, but there is a bias there, and that bias tends to show up in other means. If you do some measurements to find out whether it's just like if you did some measurements in a classroom to find out bias between boys and girls, and you checked among an aggregate of teachers, and the studies have shown that teachers are more responsive to.
You're going down a few rabbit holes, Miles.
Yes. Okay.
So this is about what people see when they search for something, and if a woman is searching for what high paying jobs. Then she's going to be shown some results.
Or just if the ads are relevant to the user, and even if they're not looking for the job specifically, but ads will come up relative to whatever the match
might
be.
Okay, so this is the ads, the accompanying ads.
This is the ads.
Okay.
And so ads that would come up for jobs that were higher paying, they would be shown as impressions to men more often than women.
And so how is that an algorithm? Lower paying jobs are available for women, but people are only advertising jobs for women that are lower paying?
Let me take this for just a second. Just let me grab an idea. Normally, the advertising is based off of what you might be interested in. So if you're going to go shop for a chainsaw, you're also going to get ads for tools of that realm, maybe lawn mowing equipment, outdoor boots, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Maybe even hiking boots as well. Maybe if you're also going to get hiking, maybe you're going to get shown a kayak ad. Mm-hmm. Because a person that gets a chainsaw might have those things in their kind of general loop. Other people that like chainsaws might have that same thing.
Got it.
So then if you assume that there's a bias, as Miles says, that high-tech jobs are normally men, and men maybe regularly are into football. Mm-hmm. If you have football running and you run an ad there, you might want to write high-tech jobs ads there more than an environment of interest that may be more associated with women. So what happens is you start looking at these areas where high-tech jobs run, they happen to be targeted to more towards men, mm-hmm. and because of that side effect. Is that kind of a good explanation of this?
I think it's a bit more subtle than that. It even isn't even so much about football per se. It's... just,
obviously a weak example.
So, yeah. So, okay, there's two things I can see here.
It's correlation causing. Like, yeah.
Data going in that the algorithm's crunching on and then is producing this result? In other words, because there are more jobs that in some way have this bias towards men that going into this algorithm that men are being shown the jobs and the women are not? Or is it more the algorithm itself has a bias against showing this to women because of the algorithm?
No, it just exemplifies.
Because fewer women have these higher paying tech jobs or higher paying jobs in general, the algorithm is going to try to find the match for who best fits this profile of the person that's in the high-paying job.
So is that why The Guardian's implicating Google a bit, or is The Guardian implicating Google
The Guardian is not saying that Google's, and I say Google as though it's a single monolithic entity, it's a bunch of people. And
we know you work there, that's fine.
No, I don't anymore.
Oh, okay, never mind.
But the thing is that it's not... I don't believe there's anything malicious there. I think it really is. It's reflecting a pattern that exists in society.
Yeah, I'd agree.
And that's one that we don't necessarily like, but it's
But what's amazing about this is that the algorithm is matching what exists in reality, right? Reality, men get paid better than women for the same job, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you map that out to a system that automates the mapping of what reality is, which is what these algorithms are trying to do, mm-hmm. it's going to amplify that to you. It's going to show that to you. And, of course, it's going to do worse than that because it's going to make, just like the bias that exists in society, it's going to it's going to enforce that bias.
Yay, Google's doing great. Oh, no, we aren't very good ourselves.
Well, that's my question then. So Google is not intentionally being... any more sexist than reality.
Society in general is intentionally being sexist. Like, that's what the society is doing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And racist. Like, that's what our society does.
So Google is not somehow counterbalancing.
Well, that's the thing, though, is that many times Google won't do anything until the problem comes about. Like, for example, people saying that vaccines cause autism, and that mm-hmm. there were so many sites that were bringing it up. That's the result that would show up at the top of Google results. And it wasn't because Google endorsed those positions. Mm-hmm. It's just that when you have an algorithm that says, what is the popular thought? What's the best result for the audience when you type in that query? Mm-hmm. The algorithm got gamed.
But Google fixed that.
Fix that. And so, it would be on the onus of Google to try to tweak this algorithm so that it can correct for this.
And so perhaps the Guardian, by pointing this out or reporting this, is hoping that that will be a result.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's a very tricky thing to fix, though.
It absolutely is, yeah.
Well, it becomes editorial comment or editorial judgment at that point.
Well, they're already kind of skating that line,
which already
they?
Exists to the nth degree with regard to Google search results.
Yeah, absolutely.
They do put in that editorial.
And the more editorial judgment you put in there, the more you open yourselves up to criticism for the judgment that you're
But in this situation, how would they, what do they do? You have to find out what gender a person associates with and therefore show them ads in a higher balance to balance up the society's
bias? Well, already, when you find a profile for someone, whether it's Google or anyone else who's doing content tracking, if they figure out, the patterns that someone has, unfortunately, people are not as unique a snowflake as they think they are. You do find pretty good trends to find out, oh, this person is African-American. This person is transsexual. This person is...
They're already doing that, basically.
Yeah, and one of the ways you find out...
This person is under 5'10".
And one of the ways you find out if a person is female is if they're paid less. The problem is that they map together. It's not like...
I wish that weren't true, but yeah.
No, that's what I'm saying, is that the algorithm is detecting the person that should get the high-paying job because our society pays men higher, right? Like, the algorithm does the right thing. So if you manipulate that algorithm to say, okay, wait a second, normally we're going to show jobs to men. It's not saying that, right? The system's not saying, let's show the high-paying jobs to men. It's saying these type of people get paid better, and therefore these are the people to do it. And it's not that they're even men. The system knows they're men necessarily. They know that they match the pattern that our society pays better.
But that's the thing. The solution ends up having to know that they are men.
That's what I'm saying. Is you'd have to take a gender bias. You have to find out what gender people are, and then modify the system to bias that direction.
They already do, awesome but idea. You'd have to apply that to the ad algorithm, which may or may not be happening already.
So the question is, do you fix the algorithm or do you fix society some other way first?
I think it's I think it's necessary
Google's
for Google
to
change the algorithm.
But it's
yeah,
up to the rest
yeah, I
of
think Google
is,
has more power over the former than the latter.
True.
When I was at the WWC, sitting in there with all these, thousands of men and a few women waiting in line to get in there, I realized this is a lottery system. More people want to buy tickets to WWC than they actually have. And so they lottery them out. Mm-hmm. So why doesn't Apple just invite more women than men to the system? Or, 50% women, 50% men. That'd be kind of novel. Of course, they don't do it that way because if they do that, it's like a political statement. But why not? Because they're
They're making a default political statement.
They certainly are. The status quo is okay.
Yeah.
That's not okay.
Well, look at us having an opinion. If we can have one, I suppose Google can too.
Yeah, you can't be neutral on a moving train.
Yeah, yeah. For instance, here's an opinion that we geeks talk too much about Apple.
Yeah, you just did it, talking about Apple and too many men.
What is the deal?
So we get feedback. We love to get email from listeners and stuff. And we've had our share of listeners pointing out, there's a whole world of Windows machines out there and Android mm-hmm. phones, and we're talking way too much about Apple.
We may or may not all be using our Apple laptops to
As we look around the room, they are all Apple laptops. But I'm not here to try to fix that right now. But what I am going to do is bring up a story that just blows my mind. It's about Apple, and it kind of is this touchstone of why do we talk about Apple so much? Why are they so important in tech right now? So there was a report just released on who's making the most money in the smartphone market. This is not who sells the most phones. This mm-hmm. is who's making the money. We've heard these stories in the past, but
I believe what you're talking about is not the apps, but the actual hardware, the
selling
the
actual handsets, selling the actual phones. So we've talked about this before, I think, in the distant past, but the number is extraordinary. 92% of all profit in the smartphone market is made by one company, and that's Apple. And the rest of the profit is made by Samsung. So the way this is possible is all other manufacturers of smartphones are either not making any money or they're losing money on their manufacturing and their selling of the smartphones.
By the way, not profit, but total operating income.
Total operating income.
Yeah, so that's
thanks for correcting
that. That's a net, that's a gross,
that's
not
a gross,
net.
Not a net.
Right, there's also numbers on profit, and I'm sorry for confusing that. just remember that net operating income is based on Apple only having the iPhones only having a 20% market share. So one out of five phones sold in smartphones sold in the world is an iPhone, and yet the operating income generated by that is 92% of the market.
Wow! Yeah.
And that also follows along with if you're paying for an app, chances are you're paying for it on an iOS device, not an Android device.
So here's the thing.
And if you get web impressions, chances are they're coming from an iOS device, not an Android device.
Right. So people are paying a premium. I mean, people complain about this that have Androids talking about iPhones all the time. Like, why do you spend so much money to buy that? Yeah. Apple's able to charge a premium for some reason, and they have some... something that they offer that people want to pay extra for. And this is just a marker of what's going on and what's happening. And then those customers are the ones that app developers want to attract because they're going to buy their app. Yep. And that the web sites want to attract because they're going to come and click on those ads in the corner.
A little bit of clarity, though, the Miles, another the correction you gave to Brian about 90% total operating income is clearly said in that if you read the entire article, it's pretty clear that it's the profit,
oh,
the income.
I am terribly sorry.
It's the way that first sentence is written. It's written really badly.
Had a correction.
Yeah, because if you talk about income, of course other companies are making income, right?
Yeah.
But they're losing money. They're not making profit. So it's written incorrectly.
All right. Well, sorry.
But it's
amazing that Apple is at that much.
Like, it's a incredible snowball effect.
Yeah. So here's the question. When somebody has that much profit, do they have that much power as well? Are they a monopoly of a type that we haven't seen before?
Here's the thing. And this is where, unfortunately, Google is behind the eight ball on, is Google can't force the carriers to update the operating system. Like, they're phones being sold today with an operating system that's 3 years old or older.
And at the same time, the manufacturers...
And has security vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
But the Verizons, the T-Mobiles, the AT&Ts won't update the phones the same way that Apple, because they muscled their way in 2007 to garner that deal, that they could do their own updates.
Well, there's more at play than this as well, because this is a worldwide number. This isn't just US-centric. You've got Android manufacturers selling all around the world, and they go for markets that Apple has no interest in at all because they generate such little revenue. Mm-hmm. These are markets like India or China that most phones don't sell for much at all compared to what an iPhone would sell for.
And they hack the Android operating system to put their own little shovelware on their own little thing. They hack it in such a way that an update isn't easy because it's been modified just so. And so, unlike Apple, where the iOS is iOS is iOS is iOS, it ends up fragmenting it for the user and makes it harder to use if they're on the Android device.
If they're on the Android device and have unlocked their phone, right, and tinkered with it, then it's harder to update?
No, none if they unlocked it. This is just coming from, if you have a Samsung phone, chances are you're not running vanilla Android, you're running Tizen.
Which is spicier.
Yeah, which is Android, except they've taken away all the default Google apps and they put in their own remodeled apps.
A particular carrier will put their own goop-de-goo.
Their own manufacturer. So you have multiple manufacturers out there and they're each tweaking it in a slightly different way, ways that don't allow for Google to do an update.
They're each manufacturer of an Android phone? Android was the manufacturer of an Android phone.
Android's the operating system that go on many phones. So Samsung, Motorola, and all these other companies make phones that the Android operating system goes on.
But many smaller ones.
How the update happens.
Oh, I see.
So it's kind of like having lots of Apple stores, right? And all of them selling different things.
And
so
having to update individually. Yeah.
It's kind of like Apple versus PC back in the day. And PCs had so much more variation, but they went cheaper because they commoditized. But
Apple winning so much? Because it's not
snowball.
It's not like the iPhones are that much better than
Android. The hardware isn't. The software is.
Yeah, I'd agree.
It is more consistent, and I mean, they don't have, you know, as much RAM, or they don't have as fast a GPU. But the software is tuned specifically for that hardware and made to to, you know, flow like butter, basically. Ooh. The animations are like butter.
Last year, Apple's average iPhone sold for $624. The compared to the average Android phone selling for $185.
And remember, these are unsubsidized prices. So what we actually see when we sign a contract is much less than that. But the actual cost of the phone that Apple has paid. Wow.
And then there's Apple controlling the supply chain. So they have the thumbprint scanner that is the best in the world.
Yeah.
And that's because they found the company that did it the best in the world, and then they bought them.
Right.
And then cornered the market and made sure that no one else could get that one.
And the cynics out there can say they get all this free press as we talk about Apple.
How many times do we just say the word Apple?
Oh, how often we've said the word Android?
Fuji.
Yeah. And then there's Windows Mobile. Oh, right. Never mind.
All right, guys. We've got like 1.5 minutes left. Who's got something that we can talk about in the next 90 seconds?
I got something that's a piece of software that I would like people to take a look at. It's called Unchecky, and it's useful for Mac and Windows. And we were talking about exploits like Flash, and that's what brought it to mind for me, because one of the biggest problems with regard to stuff getting onto, you know, your family's computer, stuff like that, is the fact that they install some software that installs the tab bar, you know, some toolbar, some extra little thing. And what Unchecky does is whatever installer you're running, it will uncheck everything.
Is this Windows specific?
No, there's a version for Mac as well. To make sure that when you're installing Java, it doesn't install the toolbar, the Yahoo toolbar that Oracle is shoving down people's throats.
If I install this on my relative's computer, it will automatically do this?
Yes.
Unchecky at geekspeak.org.
If you'd like to communicate with the show, you can reach us on Twitter. We're at KUSP Geeks, also on Facebook, all one word. Geekspeak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence and is used with permission, and Geekspeak is Creative Commons Attribution 3.0, so use our stuff any way you like. This is Public Radio for the Central Coast, 88.9 KUSP Santa Cruz, live online at KUSP.org. To find out more about this or any episode of GeekSpeak, please visit geekspeak.org. Our theme song is by Michael Newman of Pet Star Music. I'm Bonnie Jean Primsch with Miles Elam, Brian Young, and our silent producer, Lyle Troxell. Thanks to our intern, Chandler, and our Canadian correspondent and timekeeper, Greg Merkley. And thank you for being here for the July 18th, 2015 episode of GeekSpeak.